Food Network celebrity chef Paula Deen has type 2 diabetes. The so-called queen of southern cooking, who is also known for loving recipes full of fat and sugar, and who has been criticized for promoting unhealthy dishes by other celebrity chefs, announced this week on the Today Show that she has type 2 diabetes, and she's had it for the past 3 years.
I'm here today to let the world know that it is not a death sentence. Mm-hmm.
This hour, we will use the news of her announcement to talk about preventing and controlling type 2 diabetes. And we will welcome your questions and maybe even your own experiences dealing with this condition for our guest expert. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 9 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Wednesday, January the 18th. If you deal with type 2 diabetes or are trying to prevent it, we would love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Dr. Patrick Remington, physician, professor, and associate dean of public health at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He is also the former director of the Wisconsin Diabetes Control Program, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what is type 2 diabetes?
Well, a lot of people get the types of diabetes confused. There are two types. Type 1 requires insulin, usually develops in childhood. It used to be called juvenile diabetes, and it's due to unknown factors, maybe a viral infection, but for some reason the pancreas cells stop producing insulin. And so it's a very serious disease, but can be controlled well with insulin injections. Type 2, again, completely different, usually develops later in life, and has been called adult onset diabetes. It's most strongly related to obesity, poor diet, and lack of physical activity. It can be best controlled, in theory, by exercise and diet. In fact, many people can cure type 2 diabetes by becoming active and eating right. There are some medicines that are available to help when exercise and diet don't work, or even sometimes people require insulin injections for type 2 diabetes.
Yeah, type 2 diabetes, you say it's usually called adult onset diabetes, but now we're seeing this even more in younger kids.
Well, we stopped calling it adult onset diabetes maybe a decade or two ago because it rarely developed in younger people, although as you point out today, that's happening more and more commonly. Again, the strongest risk factor for type 2 diabetes is obesity, and children, adolescents, and even younger can, if they become morbidly obese, develop diabetes. The problem with diabetes is that it's not simply high blood glucose, but it is all the complications that develop downstream or later in life from diabetes. And so the complications from type 1 and type 2 can be very much the same. So again, it's as Paula Deen said, it's not a death sentence, but for many people, it's a wake-up call to think about what might be done to control it or actually cure it.
Yeah, what are the complications?
Well, there are problems with the large blood vessels. Cardiovascular disease is more common in people with diabetes. And then, for some reason, the high rates of blood glucose affect the very small vessels in the eyes, so people can get vision problems and even develop blindness. The small vessels in the kidneys are also affected, and so people can get kidney disease and even kidney failure and requiring dialysis and transplants. And finally, the small vessels in the extremities, like the toes or the feet, can have problems also related to the nerves and the ability to sense injury. And so people often get problems in their feet with blisters that don't heal and eventually end up with amputations. So it is a very serious illness. These what we call microvascular complications are significant, as well as the large vessel problems in cardiovascular disease and in stroke. If, again, that's if the diabetes is not well controlled, which it can be with exercise. Again, we're talking about type 2 diabetes, mm-hmm. exercise and eating right. Type 1 diabetes is almost exclusively controlled by insulin injections and careful diet and exercise, but it's the important critical factor for type 2 diabetes is your lifestyle.
How common today is type 2 diabetes? Do we know how many people suffer from this?
Well, we used to say that about 2 to 3% of the population had diabetes, and then another 2 to 3%, so up to 5% of the population had diabetes, half of whom were not aware. That's about doubled in the past 10 to 15 years. It's entirely related to the increased rates of obesity. There up to 8 to 10% of the population, the adult population, has adult onset diabetes, and that goes up dramatically with age, and is higher in certain racial and ethnic subgroups. So it can be as high as 25, 30, 40%, depending on the age and the ethnic background of the population.
Talk a little bit more about that. Who gets type 2 diabetes specifically?
Well, again, there are some genetic factors that interplay with people's lifestyle. So very rarely somebody with a strong family history who's active and eating right and not overweight can have type 2 diabetes. That's quite uncommon. Most often what happens is people develop diabetes after they become overweight. And if you have a family history, then your risk is even higher. And studies have shown that some populations, like Native Americans, not only have an increased genetic risk for obesity, but then also for diabetes. So those populations, there have been some research studies that have shown that 50% of a population can have diabetes. Again, the important thing is that that is the interplay with obesity. That it's not a It's not only not a death sentence, but it's not a certainty if you have a family history, if you stay active, eat a healthy diet, and control your weight.
So what are the signs of or the symptoms if you might have type 2 diabetes?
Well, I think the most important thing is to not wait until you have those clinical signs and symptoms, because that'll be a decade or even two decades after the process has started. So diabetes, type 2 diabetes, does not develop overnight. So I think the first signs or symptoms of diabetes are not exercising and not eating a healthy diet. In other words, eating too much or too much fast food, for example. So those are signs and symptoms that come probably 20 years before. And anytime you find yourself with those signs or symptoms, you're not exercising as much as you should, not getting out and walking or exercising, or you're starting to gain weight, that's the very early sign that obesity will follow and increased risk of diabetes. The later on, obviously, if you become overweight, then it's a matter of time before you have these metabolic reactions, high blood glucose, high blood cholesterol, high blood pressure. Those combine. Sometimes people have just one of those, but many people have all three, and we call that a metabolic syndrome. And all of those together significantly increase your chances of heart disease and early death.
Mm-hmm. Is this, I'll speak from personal experience. When I had a whole lot of extra weight on me maybe 10 years ago, I have taken it off, I'm happy to say. I did have a high blood glucose reading in just a regular lab work that I had done. This is regularly checked for in if you go to the doctor for a physical?
It can be. Each doctor screens differently, but most regular checkups include what's called a either a random blood glucose or better, a fasting blood glucose. That means mm-hmm. in the morning you haven't had anything to eat. And that can be a fairly sensitive and specific test to see if somebody has early diabetes or even frank diabetes. But again, what I like to emphasize is that is a, I consider that to be a late sign of diabetes. Once your glucose is elevated, then the interventions, as you know, it's often a struggle to lose weight and intervene and control the diabetes. It would be so much better to see that coming and keep active and keep the pounds from coming on.
Oh, absolutely. I did though, with the loss of that weight and regular exercise and continuing to eat right, it is not, it's just not a problem. It's gone. That blood glucose level is normal.
You know, it's very interesting. If we advertised a product and said we have the cure for diabetes, and it's very simple. It's simply being active and watching what you eat. You could sell that for, you know, tens of millions of dollars if you could somehow, you know, put it in a prescription bottle. Oftentimes, medicines are used to complement exercise and eating right, but those medicines don't work as well if people don't exercise and eat right. It's absolutely not a cure or a substitute for healthy lifestyles. In fact, I think one of the major problems with drug treatment of things like diabetes is that people feel like it's a get-out-of-jail-free card, that now, since I have the pill, I don't have to exercise, or I can really not bother to watch the food that I eat. And those people find that the medicine doesn't work as intended, because the studies have been done. All these clinical trials have looked at the medicine in an environment where people are exercising and eating right. And so when the drug gets out into general practice, if you're not careful, patients can simply think that the pill is the substitute for exercising and eating right.
Yeah. Well, Paula Dean, when she made this announcement this week that she suffers from type 2 diabetes, also talked about the diabetes drug that she is on. She has entered into some sort of endorsement deal with this particular drug. I can't remember the name of it now, but in any case, so in some cases, some people need medication in order to control it.
Yes, I think, again, it's different for every person, and I recommend that everybody talk to their physicians. Most primary care physicians can diagnose and treat type 2 diabetes. But again, the first prescription in almost every case is to increase exercise and watch your diet. Paula Dean did mention, I saw online, that she's begun to walk. She walks a mile a day now. I think that's about 2,000 or 3,000 steps, so it'd be better if she increased that a bit over time. She has lost a little weight, and she also talks about how she's going to add healthier options to some of her food shows, but also that I think she said even she's going to add the message about moderation even more, that the types of foods that she talks about should be used in moderation, and she's going to point that out even more in the future.
We are talking about type 2 diabetes, since Southern Chef Paula Dean announced this week that she has it, and she is working on controlling it, and she's also working on raising awareness of the condition. We are talking with our guest expert about type 2 diabetes and the best ways to prevent it and control it. And we're welcoming your questions, and we're welcoming your own experiences, whether you or maybe a loved one has had type 2 diabetes. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Dr. Patrick Remington, a physician, a professor, and Associate Dean of Public Health at UW-Madison, former director of the Wisconsin Diabetes Control Program. This is the Ideas Network.
on my show, you know, I share with you all these yummy fattening recipes, but I tell people in moderation.
That's Food Network chef Paula Deen on the Today Show this week when she announced that she has type 2 diabetes. Paula Deen, known for her dishes that are full of fat and sugar, says that she always preached moderation. And as our guest expert mentioned, she says she will do more of that. Dr. Patrick Remington is our guest, talking with us about type 2 diabetes and what to do to prevent and control it. Did all the fat and sugar in all of Paula Deen's recipes contribute to her or cause her type 2 diabetes, Dr. Remington?
Well, again, it's hard to say for sure for any one individual, but it's epidemiologic research has for 50 years shown that people who eat diets high in fat and simple sugars are more likely to gain weight and, as a result, more likely to get diabetes. So I think it's almost always a combination of too little exercise and too much food, and sometimes the wrong types of food. I also want to point out that research has shown that exercise alone, even exercise that doesn't lead to weight loss, can cure diabetes, type 2 diabetes. So that sometimes people have tried to shed pounds and by becoming more active, and they look down at the scale and are frustrated by the fact that not only does weight not come off, but sometimes if you build muscle mass, you might gain a few pounds. Really important not to use body weight as the only measure of the success of your new healthy habits, is to look at, with your doctor, the control of your blood glucose. And much research has shown that simply increasing activity and modestly by walking each day and by exercising with a little more vigor several times a week, that you can cure diabetes. The pounds might come off later if you cut back on calories, but the most important thing is to be active, and that activity then helps your body regulate the blood glucose.
Let's take some calls. We have full lines. Judy in Chippewa Falls is with us first. Hello, Judy.
Hi.
Hi.
I live with type 2 diabetes every day. First of all, I'd like to say that I do congratulate Paula Deen for coming out publicly and talking about it, because I suppose, you know, being a big star and having a cooking show, she probably had reservations about whether she should really admit that or not. But I think that's the first step in her getting more healthy. I live with type 2 diabetes every day. I was diagnosed about 10, 15 years ago. I was obese my whole life as a little kid, and I probably had it before then, but didn't know it. And I had the gastric bypass about 7 years ago. I went in the hospital on 13 pills, and one of them was for diabetes, and I came out on two. And I'm not recommending that for everyone, but diet and exercise is really important. I've learned to label read. I never really paid attention to what was in things until I started reading labels. And there is sugar in almost everything you eat. And diet and exercise, I have to say the exercise I could do a little better on. In the wintertime, it's hard. I'm 60 years old, so it's hard for me to get out. But I live with 2 8-year-old grandsons that keep me pretty active.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to say that, you know, it is not a death sentence. And I'm 60 years old, and I feel pretty good. Well, I do have to watch what I eat, though.
I'm glad you called, Judy. When you say you're looking at labels a lot more now, are you trying to avoid foods that that contain sugar?
Well, if it's something I think I can live without, I just don't get it. You know, I read labels a lot more now than I ever did before, because you would be surprised how much natural sugar is in things that you don't even realize. Onions have natural sugar. You know, everything has sugar and things in it that you probably really shouldn't have. It's hard to avoid it in everything. You can't give up absolutely everything, but in moderation is a big word. Even my grandsons will help me. Grandma, you know, you really shouldn't have that, or let's have this instead. They're really good about label reading, too, because we all go to the store together, and they even are reading labels now, and they're learning in school in the nutrition they're learning good, healthy foods to eat, too. So I don't think you can ever start too early.
Wonderful. Well, good for your grandkids, and good for you, too, Judy. A reaction, Dr. Remington?
Well, she makes wonderful points. I think, first of all, she talked about early on living with obesity as a child or a young adult. And I think, again, there's sort of the immediate concern of people who are not exercising or just have trouble doing that. How do you address that? Maybe you go in and the doctor says, oh, no, your blood glucose is fine. But the chances of it becoming a problem later are great. So intervene early by increasing exercise and watching what you eat. But then the other point, she talked about bariatric surgery. Unfortunately, she's right in that bariatric surgery for people who are obese, and that's not just a little bit, but what's called morbidly obese, a body mass index of 40 or greater, it's been shown to actually be effective and quite cost effective, and it does cure some of the complications like hypertension or diabetes. The reason I say unfortunately is we really don't want to move to a healthcare system or a society where we have unhealthy environments and fast food, and then everybody is at increased risk of obesity, which we then cure with an expensive, complicated surgery. I think we really want to think about prevention and more what we call upstream approaches. But for those individuals who find it difficult to lose weight and who are morbidly obese, bariatric surgery is an effective option.
And Judy mentioned that she was on a pill for diabetes when she went in for that gastric surgery. Some people, like Paula Deen, is now on a medication to control it. If you're unable to lose the weight and or through the exercise bring down your blood glucose numbers, then a physician's going to put you on something like this?
Quite often, medicine has to be used in addition to exercise and diet. But again, I want to make sure that people understand that there's a difference between diet and exercise failing and failing to use diet and exercise. Mm-hmm. And they're often confused. So if somebody actually becomes active 5 days a week and develops good exercise pattern and honestly eats a healthy diet, and still doesn't work, then I think medicine is a good addition to that regimen. But very often people fail. Not the exercise and diet doesn't fail. People actually fail to put that into their daily routine. And then I think the medicine is not going to be as effective. It's going to cost the healthcare system a lot of money, and it can have an unintended consequence of people thinking they, you know, get a free ride and don't have to do the lifestyle intervention.
I'm just curious, how do these medications work? What are they doing? Are they adding insulin to your system, or how are they controlling your blood sugar?
Well, type 2 diabetes is different than type 1. Type 1, the medicine is insulin because there's a absolute lack or deficit of insulin. The cells can read the insulin if it's there. In type 2 diabetes, the problem is not a lack of insulin. In fact, there's plenty of insulin around. It's that the cells are resistant to the effects of insulin. And so it's actually called insulin resistance. So insulin can be used, but more commonly, the medicines improve the body's sensitivity to the insulin that's there. And they have different pharmacologic effects, but fundamentally, they allow the insulin that you're normally secreting to work better.
I get it. Thanks again, Judy, for the call, and much luck to you. Laura in Manitowoc is with us now. Hi, Laura.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. You may just have answered my question, but I'm calling because my dad was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes just a couple of years ago, and he's always been very active and very slim. And in fact, you know, he's been managing it just with diet and just slight changes to his diet, really. But now he's extremely thin. He is 5'11", and I would say he's barely 120 pounds. And he's 80 years old, and he's still out there, you know, digging trenches, and he has a hobby farm, so he's you know, just very active. And his mother did have type 2 diabetes also. And I'm thinking of myself. I'm not overweight, and I exercise a lot, but I'm wondering if this is coming down the road for me, and then, you know, how maybe he should manage it with some medication, since the diet seems to be kind of taking a toll on him.
Well, that's it's hard to comment on an individual's perspective, but there are, I have a very good friend who's about as active, in fact, more active than nearly anyone I know, and he has type 2 diabetes. So that's perplexing in that that doesn't fit the normal background of somebody with type 2 diabetes who's usually inactive, not eating right, and overweight. So I think it's important for people who have good diets and are active and still have problems with their glucose levels to work closely with their doctor. And I think in that case, the medicine can be helpful. It's not always effective. Diet and exercise is not 100% effective in curing or controlling diabetes, and it's important to work with your doctor. But it sure sounds to me, being 80 years old and being able to be physically active and otherwise in good health, that your father's doing something right.
Yeah, sure does sound like it. But it sounded like our caller was also, you know, was concerned that he was thin and active, and now he's even thinner because he's making, you know, more diet modifications. Should she be concerned about him, you know, losing more weight on this?
Again, I think a proper diet is, as you increase your exercise, you'll find that you actually have to eat more. So I do think epidemiologic research shows that the people who actually eat more are healthier because they're actually exercising more. So it is important that if you increase exercise, it's not only okay, but it's essential to eat more. The key is to eat better foods, foods that aren't high in saturated fats and simple sugars.
There we go. And should she, might there be some sort of genetic link if his mother had it, dad has it, now maybe should Laura be thinking about this?
I think she's doing exactly the right thing, which is being active and watching her diet. But then anybody with a family history of type 2 diabetes should be checked by their physician to make sure that the diabetes doesn't sneak up on them, so that a regular checkup to make sure that not only are you doing the right lifestyle intervention, but you're also screened for high blood glucose.
Laura, thank you very much for the call. Here's an email from Jackie in Oshkosh. My father has had type 2 diabetes for several years now. For the first few years, he remained in denial and refused to take medication on a regular basis. After much begging, he has finally started to take his medication regularly, but has not changed his diet or his exercise habits at all. He believes that if he takes medication and his blood sugar levels remain relatively stable, he's fine. I watch him eat large slices of cake and make jokes about it. It really bothers me, and I can't seem to get through to him. What would you recommend? What might you say to him about the long-term effects of not changing his lifestyle?
Well, this is the crux of the matter. I think, first of all, when I talk about a lifestyle prescription that physicians give patients, it's only a prescription. You can't really control an individual's lifestyle. So just as with cigarette smoking and wanting to quit, it fundamentally is something that the individual has to want to do. And it is hard today to be active and to eat right. It's much harder today than it was 20 years ago. So I think the first thing is to convince a person that it's the right thing to do. The downstream or the long-term health consequences of diabetes are serious, and people have to realize that it is a wake-up call for things that complications that might arise. But fundamentally, that's a conversation I think that's best to begin with the family, but continue with a physician. And again, he's doing what many people do, which is to let the drug substitute for much lower cost and much more effective lifestyle intervention. And just a caution that these drugs were not designed and not tested to work among people who aren't exercising and eating right. If you look at the drug that Paula Deen is promoting, she emphasizes that it's a part of a healthy lifestyle intervention. In fact, the webpage talks about eating right and exercising. And if that's not successful, then talking with your doctor about the use of drugs.
Yeah. Does the healthy lifestyle mean you never can have a piece of chocolate cake?
Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. I think Paula Deen has made that point. I don't mm-hmm. watch much television, don't get cable, so I've never actually seen her show. I understand she talks about deep-fried Twinkies and gallons of butter in her recipes. And clearly, these are not modern-day poisons. When consumed in excess, foods high in saturated fats and simple sugars lead to health problems, but certainly not in moderation. I think the challenge is defining what someone means by moderation. Does that mean only once a day for a unhealthy meal, or once a week, or several times a month? So I think it is better to develop habits that are, you know, the norm, and then occasionally splurge with unhealthy options.
Our next caller is Jeanette in La Crosse. Hello, Jeanette.
Hi. I have a question for you. My mom lives in a nursing home, and she's gained quite a bit of weight, unfortunately, and she has bad knees, and they don't allow her to go swimming. You know, I mean, they won't pay for that. And I was wondering, do you have any suggestions for someone in her situation?
Yeah, this is an incredible challenge. I think it's really what we call sort of a spiral of health problems, in that with this obesity epidemic and so many more people becoming significantly overweight, in particular at a younger age, the problems begin to compound. For example, arthritis of the knee is becoming increasingly more common. When you have bad knees, it's hard to exercise. When you don't exercise, you gain weight, which causes the knees to hurt more. Mm-hmm. And so this spiral or sort of a chain of events really makes it hard. And swimming and warm water exercise is a great option. What we've actually found is that arthritis, interestingly, the prescription used to be don't use that knee, you know, avoid exercise, but it's just the opposite now. Arthritic joints actually, when used, begin to function better. So what I recommend under the care of a doctor is to see whether controlling pain, maybe with a pain medicine like Aleve, can allow somebody to exercise and increase mobility. It's otherwise going to be very hard. It's almost impossible to control weight simply by restricting calories. The research has shown that you really need to build it on a base of being more active, and then, in effect, not eating quite as much more as you feel like you should. And that calorie imbalance is better driven by exercising more and not by eating less.
Yeah. And do you know, Dr. Remington, if that was all great advice, but could just, I don't know, chair exercises where you're maybe not getting any sort of cardiovascular stuff going, is that helpful, or does it need to be a certain kind of exercise? She could, like, do weights sitting in a chair or something like that.
It is interesting that there's been research lately that hasn't studied exercise as much as just sedentary activity, that the amount of time we spend sitting and not moving about even a little bit. So, yes, absolutely. Small amounts of activity over the day, simply moving about or walking up and down a hall, or as you point out, if you're not able to walk without pain, just being active. Those are burning calories, and although it might only burn 5 or 10 calories in a little bit of time, if you do that over an extended period of time, they do add up.
Thanks very much, Jeanette, for the call. We are talking about diabetes with Dr. Patrick Remington. He is a physician, professor, and associate dean of public health at UW-Madison, former director of the Wisconsin Diabetes Control Program. We're talking about type 2 diabetes with the announcement this week that Food Network chef Paula Dean has type 2 diabetes and is trying to raise awareness of the condition. And we're welcoming your questions and your experiences at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up, Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock, and she will welcome in the state chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, Mike Tate, coming up after 9 to talk about the recall efforts against Governor Scott Walker and others. Democrats and organizers yesterday handed in more than a million signatures in that effort. We'll talk about what's next coming up after 9 o'clock. Right now we're talking about diabetes with Dr. Patrick Remington, who, among other things, is the former director of the Wisconsin Diabetes Control Program. Lots of callers, Dr. Remington, but what is that Wisconsin Diabetes Control Program all about?
Well, about 20 years ago, actually longer than that now, CDC, the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta, used to have a public health program for diabetes control. And what they did was support nurses, public health nurses in communities, in health departments, to screen people for example, diabetic foot ulcers, and to actually help people with diabetes. They changed that dramatically and said that the new approach is what's called a health systems approach. And that means that healthcare systems will keep better track of their patients, monitor things like blood glucose and hemoglobin A1C, which are measures to see how well somebody's diabetes is being controlled, and then do these quality improvement efforts to try and make these numbers for their entire insured population better. And we got a grant from CDC in about 1990 to start a statewide program to work with the health insurers in Wisconsin. And actually, Wisconsin led the nation in the quality of diabetes care provided to its to the people with diabetes just by doing a better job of keeping track of patients and, you know, getting them reminders to come in and to have their blood glucose or their hemoglobin A1C checked. So it was a good example of working together with health insurers and health systems to try and do a better job of controlling the disease among people already diagnosed.
Okay, thanks. And we go now to Grace in New Glarus. Hello, Grace.
Hello. How are you folks today?
Very good. Okay, I hope
really,
you're well.
Yeah, really appreciate the show. What I'm concerned about and haven't heard much about are the consequences of metabolic syndrome in and of itself. For people who have it, you know, where it's not progressed to full-blown type 2 diabetes, what are the consequences? Yeah, there's high blood pressure, so there's a lot that can go on with that, but are there additional things to be worried about?
Well, again, metabolic syndrome, as I described earlier, is the combination not just of a high blood glucose or high blood cholesterol or high blood pressure. It's the combination of all of those things together. And yes, they can lead, that metabolic syndrome can increase the risk of chronic disease outcomes like stroke and cardiovascular disease. The frustrating thing is that each of those things don't have, I should say none of those, has a symptom that people can feel. You don't really feel high blood pressure, high blood cholesterol, high blood glucose, typically. And so these are silent risk factors. But the consequences, the heart disease, the narrowing of the heart arteries or stroke can be devastating. So I think the biggest problem with metabolic syndrome is that people don't really realize how serious it is as a risk factor for significant disease down the road. Again, I like to think, though, more importantly, about the lifestyles that might lead to those later on.
All right, Grace.
Okay. So basically, you look at it more as a risk factor for more serious problems down the line. Is it that there really hasn't been much research done to correlate metabolic syndrome with other issues? I mean, I know that diabetes can have problems you were talking about earlier with the impact on the capillaries and such, and leading to blindness and kidney failure and loss of circulation in the extremities, particularly amputations of toes and feet and all. Has there been any research to look at the incidence of those sorts of things relative to metabolic syndrome, sans diabetes?
Yes, I think all of the all of these problems can together, and even more important, this multiplied effect of having problems with your glucose, lipid levels, and blood pressure. But again, the downstream diseases tend to be things like heart attacks, heart failure, arrhythmias of the heart, and then stroke, cerebrovascular disease. Those are really the major leading causes of death that result from problems with metabolic syndrome. But again, almost always the root cause of metabolic syndrome is a lack of physical activity and eating too much, leading to obesity. So I think the medical model is to sort of monitor these blood levels and look for metabolic syndrome rather than monitoring somebody's exercise pattern early in life or even body weight. I don't understand why, as a healthcare system, we don't have an alert system that as somebody begins to increase their weight and body mass index, that there's a stepped intervention, that as somebody goes from a body mass index from 25 to 30, that's the point to intervene and to have strong prescriptions and support to intervene rather than waiting 10 or 15 years till blood levels begin to become abnormal.
Thank you, Grace, for the call. Darlene emails, I was diagnosed 18 months ago, and I have found that getting regular sleep is critical. If I don't get enough sleep or my sleep pattern changes drastically, my blood sugar starts bouncing around and I feel lousy. I don't quite understand what sleep has to do with all of this, but I find it to be a curious thing. Is it related, Dr. Remington?
Well, I'm smiling because my department chair, Dr. Javier Nieto, is an expert on the health effects and the health benefits of sleep. In fact, the University of Wisconsin is a major research institution in this area. And we are just discovering the health benefits of sleep, and the flip side is the risks of not getting enough sleep. Rates of obesity increase, and I don't know the exact details, but I would suspect that people who get sufficient sleep not only have a better outcome in eating right and exercising, but also controlling their blood lipids and blood glucose levels. So sleep is obviously, it's really a not well appreciated risk factor for chronic diseases, and you make a good point. I also think it brings up the issue of whatever works, is that it's not going to be the same thing and the same success story for everybody, that people have to figure out how to get exercise, get eating right, and sleeping enough within their own lifestyle.
Yeah, I got to work on that one especially. Our next caller is Bill in Milwaukee. Hello, Bill.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm a type 2 diabetic. I've been for a while, and I'm glad that this topic finally came up. I hope there's going to be a few more in the future on this. But I just was kind of curious when the doctor was talking about people. I was diagnosed pre-diabetic and then did as much as I could because it's a family hereditary thing and finally developed a full-blown type 2. But I have never heard anybody, doctors or anything I've ever read, say there's any, you know, there is no cure for diabetes. You may be able to stop it from developing or retard its promotion, but there's no such thing as that I'm aware of. You know, curing diabetes is a chronic disease. You can't cut it out, burn it out, or any other way to get rid of it. So I think it's maybe misleading to be saying that, you know, you can cure this if you do this, 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 and this. And that's about really all I've got to say, because I think people who have diabetes listening to this show know the repercussions of what it is. And most people probably do not know it as it is sugar, but, it's, you know, sugar is in everything you eat. Your blood runs on glucose, which comes from any carbohydrate, anything you eat. So it's something, you know, something that's going to turn into sugar to fuel your body at some point or another. So it's just, it's not if you see somebody eating 25 candy bars, God, if they stop, they're going to be fine, because if they eat two or three sandwiches a day, that might be too many carbs. And right. The last thing I'd like to say is I'm not so familiar with this this Chef Dean or whatever, but I think the biggest problem we're going to be running into in the future with all whatever the way that people acquire diabetes is, she says it is not a death sentence. Well, I think but when 1/4 of the people in the United States do not have health care, and this is a very expensive disease. Again, it's a chronic disease. It's not going to go away. I know people in our clinic that I go to, which is a neighborhood clinic, are not being able to be treated properly because they do not have the money for their metformin, their glipizide, their testing strips, or anything like that. An A1C test 2 or 3 times a year could cost anywhere from $500 to $600.
Very important issues you bring up, Bill, at the end of our hour. First, Dr. Remington, Bill says, you know, there just isn't a cure if you have type 2 diabetes. Is that right?
Well, I don't think that's exactly right. It's how you define it. I don't think you'll ever get rid of the risk that people with a family history and the people who've had type 2 diabetes will always be at risk. But unlike some diseases where you can only control them, I think with there's good evidence that with exercise and diet, many people can effectively cure their diabetes as long as they stay active and eating right. The other point he brings up is that diabetes points out the problems with the current healthcare system, that having people without insurance is very difficult to control diabetes, and how we design our communities. The fact that we have an obesity epidemic is not less personal responsibility or less knowledge. It's really we've created a toxic environment, and it's something that the public health approach needs to be redirected to design healthy communities, good education systems, good jobs, so that people can lead long and healthy lives. And if we simply wait until people have develop diabetes, we'll be doing too little too late.
Yeah. And in our final minute, are you optimistic that we might be able to reverse this trend, prevent more cases of type 2 diabetes?
Well, there's a paper just out this week in the Journal of the American Medical Association that says that the obesity epidemic has finally leveled off. It's not going down, but the increase has stopped. I think it's going to be very difficult to reverse the epidemic. I do think it's possible. And just as people in the 1950s were looking at a half a century of effort to control and reduce the burden from cigarette smoking, I think we're talking about the long run, designing communities, schools, improving education systems, and the healthcare system. All of these things taken together can have an impact, but it's going to take the whole community to get it done.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Dr. Patrick Remington, physician, professor, and associate dean of public health at UW-Madison. Thanks to Amanda Magnus for producing the program. Thanks to Rob Ferret for on-air direction. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.